So interesting that you say that, because like I had never, like, as someone who, like, not just watched The Dropout, but like watched the interviews, like watched the 2020 special, like I never, that didn't cross my mind. But when you said, I was like, oh no, yeah, I can see that. That, like, actually,
that's the first thing that stood out to me. I swear to God, I was like, oh, this bitch is on the spectrum. Like, at a time when literally the only
Hello, everyone. This is Alex.
And this is Em.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Good, The Bad, The Basic.
This is the podcast for anyone who enjoys binge watching new TV series and revisiting old favorites. On this podcast, we'll be discussing what we love, what we hate, and what's just a bit problematic about the TV and movies that we're addicted to, though not necessarily in that order. This week, we'll continue our limited edition season and dive into a discussion of the edgy, tense, and loaded biographical drama, The Dropout.
This series chronicles the rise and eventual crash and burn of disgraced biotech girl boss Elizabeth Holmes. After dropping out of Stanford, Elizabeth goes on to be the founder and CEO of Theranos, a company who claimed to be able to test for dozens of illnesses, diseases, and even cancer with only a single drop of blood. But as Theranos grew, so did suspicion of what Elizabeth and her COO were doing behind the scenes, and why Theranos seemed to be all talk and no action. So is the dropout worth watching? Stay tuned.
All right, everyone, here are some critical details about this series. The Dropout is classified as a biographical drama, dark comedy, and true crime. It was released on Hulu, and it was released from March 3rd to April 7th of 2022. It is based on The Dropout, the ABC News podcast, and it was created by Elizabeth Meriwether. The series stars Amanda Seyfried as Elizabeth Holmes, our protagonist, a Stanford dropout who founds a healthcare startup. Naveen Andrews as Sunny Balwani, Elizabeth's boyfriend and Theranos' eventual COO. William H. Macy as Richard Fuse, Elizabeth's childhood neighbor and an owner of several healthcare patents. Laurie Metcalf as Phyllis Gardner, a pharmacologist who was one of Elizabeth's early skeptics. Bill Irwin as Channing Robertson, Elizabeth's chemical engineering professor at Stanford and Theranos' first board member. Stephen Fry as Ian Gibbons, a Theranos' chief scientist at one point. Elizabeth Marvel as Noelle Holmes, Elizabeth's mother. Michael Gill as Chris Holmes, Elizabeth's father and a former Enron employee. Michael Watkins as Linda Tanner, Theranos' in-house counsel. Sam Waterston as George Shultz, a former U.S. Secretary of State and Theranos board member. Dylan Minnette as Tyler Shultz, George's grandson and a Theranos employee turned whistleblower. Cameron Min-Young Kim as Erica Chung, a Theranos employee turned whistleblower. Kevin Sussman as Mark Rossler, a Theranos' lab director who helps break the story on their fraudulent practices. Sam Straley as Christian Holmes, Elizabeth's brother and Theranos CSO. Kurtwood Smith as David Bowies, Elizabeth's lawyer. Eben Moss Bachrat as John Carreyrou, the reporter for the Wall Street Journal who exposes Theranos' fraud, and Lisa Gay Hamilton as Judith Baker, John Carreyrou's editor at the Wall Street Journal. Now, these are not even all the important people. These are just the important people we see the most often. Because now on this show, even some of the minor players have a major impact. And we'll talk more about that later. But there were a lot of moving cogs in this Elizabeth Holmes discussion. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about Elizabeth Holmes.
So really quick. So this is, like Em said, this is like helmed by Elizabeth Meriwether. If you know, if that name sounds familiar to you, it should. Elizabeth Meriwether was like the creator and executive producer who helmed New Girl, New Girl, as well as Single Parents. So she also wrote No Strings Attached, the Ashton Kutcher, Mila Kunis rom-com. So this is definitely like, I guess like a, maybe not her first foray, because I'm sure she's written a lot of dramas. They've just never been produced. But this is like her first produced sort of drama. So like, I guess those like weird, the sort of weird interludes, like with like Elizabeth listening to those weird songs, is like maybe Elizabeth's sort of like comedy stamp on the show. Mm-hmm. But
except that is also something that apparently the real Elizabeth Holmes did. And I want to talk more about that later. I will talk about it when I talk about the little armchair diagnosis that I gave her. the first thing I want to talk about was, and I feel the show really came out strong with making this a point of in the first episode, that Elizabeth's father, Chris, was an Enron employee, right? And he'd been working for months without pay and being promised by these people. And like, not without pay. That's incorrect. Enron employees at the height of the Enron scandal were being paid an Enron stock, which wasn't worth anything because the company wasn't worth anything. The first thing I want to talk about is what effect do you think seeing her father in that situation had on Elizabeth's psyche?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know. You go first. What do you think?
I don't know. When I first started watching the show, I was like, oh, okay, like, this is a really fucked up situation. She had to go, they had to go asking their wealthy neighbor for a loan, right?
Right.
And like begging to him. And at first I thought like this Richard Fuse person was a relative. No, he was just like a wealthy guy that they knew who lived in the neighborhood. And apparently they had gone to him for money once in the past before.
Right.
But like, the situation was weird to me because she understood what that was like, and then she later puts her employees in a similar situation.
I mean, I think maybe you can expound or, like, think that she just, having, like, that example, like, she just didn't think any of this shit was real. Like, she definitively is like, none of this shit is real. All of it's made up. Like, you know what I mean?
Right, no, she's, like, the CEO of, like, you know, you know, be delusional until it manifests.
Right. Like, we're manifesting.
We're manifesting, bitches. Jump in. No, I thought that was really interesting. Well, not necessarily. She didn't put her employees in the same situation necessarily. Her employees were getting paid. It was the board members that were getting shafted, right? And the investors that were getting screwed.
Right. But, yeah, so I just think this show is so interesting. Like, I mean, her whole story is interesting because it's like, well, it's not, it's interesting and it isn't. Because in one sense, it's like, well, maybe all these men just wanted to fuck her. Like,
That's another point that I wanted to talk about. She seemed to have this really strong hold on older men, specifically older men. Like, she wasn't really doing anything to like pull the wool over the eyes of men in her own age group, but older men seem to have a really heightened, lofty view of her as someone with real integrity, right? The only person who didn't get got was her neighbor, Richard Fuse. and that's because he was low-key jealous of her, right?
Right. Like, and so it's like, is it because he legitimately didn't believe, or is he just feels the type of way that like she was trying to shaft him out of his patent? Like,
right. And the show makes it clear. It was a jealousy that was like the strongest point of contention. He only found out that her company was bullshit in the midst of like trying to sabotage her.
Right. Cause his whole thing the whole time was like, he was just mad that he was not about to get this cut. Like, he was like, oh, you're going to, he was mad as fuck that he wasn't going to get, like, that his check wasn't going to be cut.
He seemed to feel a way too that Elizabeth didn't think that he was smart. And he says this himself. He's like, on that first episode, he's like trying to say, like, he asked her straight up, like, do you think you're smarter than me? And she doesn't answer. She just gives him a look that's like, fuck yeah, I'm smarter than you.
Smarter than you. Like, later on,
he's like, she's doing a healthcare startup. I own healthcare patents. How come she didn't ask me for help? If she had asked me for help, I would have given her the patent for a dollar. But because she didn't ask for my help, because she didn't seek my counsel, because she didn't think I was smart enough, I'm going to sabotage her.
big Salieri energy.
Yes. I was just like, you are a grown man fighting with, at this point, a 21-year-old. You're like 60 something. Get it together.
Right. Get it the fuck together. But all these older men are really into her. Like, and they're just like, and I'm really, you know what? It comes back to something. I wonder if it comes back to something that you were saying before when we watched like Inventing Anna about this idea of when Inventing Anna and that businessman, like the financial planner, of like maybe what they saw in her is like, you know, they look at their own granddaughters, right? And by their view, their granddaughters are frivolous, you know, they only care about TikTok or like Fenty Beauty or like whatever the fuck. And here's this young girl from Stanford who is like founded a healthcare company, who wants to change lives. And they're like, why can't my granddaughter be like you? Like, mm-hmm. I wonder if that's it as well.
I believe that that is it. I believe that they see Elizabeth as a woman who's got her head on her shoulders and like she's moving, she's shaking. Because I really didn't get the impression that that Elizabeth is someone who is seen as, and this is the best word I can think of, desirable. Other than Sunny, I don't think anyone really saw her in that light. And I think she went out of her way to make sure that she wasn't seen in that light. Anytime you saw her, she usually looked frumpled and haggard and, you know, under-rested and underfed and just like she was firing on all cylinders at all times and didn't have time for like frivolities such as beauty, right?
Right. She's like, she's not like those other girls. I definitely think that's a part of it. So she is so, okay. So here's another, so this is like Amanda Seyfried's sort of like return to, I think, public spotlight. Amanda Seyfried had like, you know, got married and had a bunch of, like, I think she had a couple of kids and, hadn't really been doing a lot. So like The Dropout was kind of like her first big thing back on screen. And I thought she did like a really good job. I forgot how much I like Amanda Seyfried as an actress.
Mm-hmm, me too. I think she did a great job.
Yeah, I think she did a really great job. Like I feel like she did a really good job of like, I think in this new era, we get like, we're overly concerned with people who were overly concerned in the biopics in the sense of like, I feel like people are like, oh, does this person, how, like, this person really needs to look like them? But like, mm-hmm. I never think that's actually the important part. Like, my thing is like, I'm always willing to forgive looks because one, that's costume and makeup's department, like, that's their job. To get you there, but like also I'm more of like, can you really embody like the spirit of that person? To mm-hmm. me, that's like the most important part, and I think she absolutely nails that.
I agree with that. And I will say though, I've seen the pictures of Elizabeth Holmes, and Elizabeth's most distinct defining feature, I think Amanda Seyfried nailed it. Now, Amanda Seyfried is someone who was known as her, like, her defining feature are very large eyes, like doe-eyed queen. And the thing is, she always put out that, like, she always played characters who, even if they were, like, you know, not they didn't, like, every light bulb wasn't turned on, they had these very beautiful, very big, alluring doe eyes. Elizabeth, in every single photo, every single interview of her, she has a stare that is actually deeply unsettling. And Amanda nailed that in her portrayal of Elizabeth.
Right. No, that's true. She, like, Elizabeth Holmes kind of does this thing where she bugs her eyes out. and stares, and Amanda kind of nails that, like, that also sort of bug-eyed stare thing.
And this is where we get to Emlyn's armchair diagnosis, because I believe that Elizabeth Holmes is autistic, and more specifically, I believe that she is one of those autistic people who is aware enough about the way the world works that she understands the value of masking, but she never figured out how to do it properly. Elizabeth's stare.
hence the stare. That's real. So like she's...
I'm going to continue on this. One of the larger points for me in the show that makes it very clear that A, she knows she's autistic, or at least that she knows she's different. B, she's unable to mask. And I think a set of events that really shows how it can be to an autistic person's detriment if they don't know how to mask is when Elizabeth is raped at Stanford, right?
Mm-hmm.
Goes, she tells the campus police, she reports it, she does all the things that she's supposed to do, but she cannot get a single person to believe her and give like just a character statement on her behalf, right? And you're thinking like, why is this? It's not because she's dumb. It's not she has like a reputation for being quote unquote loose and promiscuous. It's not because she's mean. It's because people don't like her, because people feel uneasy around her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then she learned the hard way, unfortunately, that a lot of people's relationships and the way they see other people are very superficial. And she was a victim of that.
Right. You're totally right. Like, that is like a big, big part of it. Like, so Elizabeth is there. She has that experience, but she's at Stanford. And so she is just like any other Stanford student, you know, reading a lot, and gets this idea for healthcare and how to change healthcare. And this, and that's the thing, like, and Elizabeth, and you know what, another clue into how Elizabeth is a weird person, like she's a little off, is like she can't really sustain friendships with people her own age. Like all of her friends are just these weird older people. Like, because she meets the Stephen Fry character, who that's like the first scientist guy, right?
Yeah, Ian Gibbons,
who she's like, I think I could do this thing with, you know, the blood. And he is immediately like, oh, that's cool. Like, she's like, I've been reading these things, and I think that while reading these things, I can do this other thing. And that's what they do, right? They start this little fun club, and like, Ian is such a tragic figure, he is like, particularly with regards to like how it all begins, because he's just like, he's a guy who had been doing this for a long time, who'd been in his career for a long time, and just sort of was bored, right? And here comes this young woman with like, you know, really interesting ideas that he's interested in. And he says to his wife at one point, like I've never been so excited, right, about like life, you know, just really happy to be doing things. So she has this idea about the blood, and he, you know, is in it with her, and they start working on what will eventually be Theranos, which eventually takes us to Sunny. So let's talk about Sunny a little bit.
So Sunny is a guy that Elizabeth meets actually in the summer between her senior year of high school and her freshman year of college. She meets him in like a study abroad program. She is going to, I believe it's Thailand, and she's learning to speak Mandarin. And he's in the program, I believe, as like a grad student, because he's working on one of his other degrees. He's significantly older than her. I believe there's like a 18 or 19 year age difference between the two of them. But he's immediately struck by how smart she is. And this is her relationship with all older men in particular. They are always enamored with her intellect and how she carries herself in a way where it's like, she doesn't shy away from her intellect. Like, she doesn't downplay it the way that most women who do know how to mask tend to do in male company, right? Yeah. She immediately lets him see how smart she is. And on top of that, when he's wrong, like he says something wrong in Mandarin, she corrects him. And he is completely taken with her. And despite their age differences and the fact that he's actually married when they met, he was still married to his first wife. They begin a relationship. According to the show, we don't know what's real, right? But as far as anyone knows, that relationship wasn't consummated when they met when she was like 18. But they kept in contact and they would call each other rather religiously, right? Like call each other a few times a week, stay in touch. And, you know, she was there for him. He was there for her. But the relationship was always skewed in her favor, right? With Sonny always wanting to be what Elizabeth needed him to be.
Right. I mean, there is so something that like the show doesn't really like in their dynamic that the show never really like comments on. And like, I wouldn't want them to, cause I don't know that Elizabeth Merriweather has the bandwidth for it, but like, was like, it's like the racial dynamic, right?
Mm-hmm.
The like how like their racial dynamic complicates the power dynamic between them.
It absolutely does.
Yeah. Like in the sense of like, he is also, cause she, like you said, she's in this exchange program, but like, I think he himself is like a graduate student somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was. He was working on one of his other degrees or yeah. something like that.
He's, even though he's like a graduate student, it's like, you know, she's American, right? She's white, she's blonde, she's thin, mm-hmm. she's conventionally attractive. He is none of those things. And so that puts them in a weird place in regards to like what is this, but mm-hmm. because he makes a lot of choices that he absolutely should not make, and I don't know that he would have made them had he been an older white man. Like, I don't think so. I think he'd have been like
I don't know. I feel like an older white man, like, she might have finessed him to do the same thing. Because, again, I saw how a lot of those white men were enamored with her, even if it was not sexual. I believe the only people who were immune to Elizabeth's charms were, like you said, her peers, people her own age, and women. Older women seemed to see Elizabeth in a light that a lot of men didn't see her. Like, they automatically caught this girl as weird and not in a good way.
No, that's true. So I will say that's like something that's a function. That's definitely like a function that I think that's a function and an idea that like the narrative, the dropout in general is definitely like interested in and playing with, because mm-hmm. in terms of trying to think about how women can see like a bit quicker through other women. And I actually mm-hmm. remember thinking that was I remember being really interested in that vision of the show because I think that's a very complex idea, like, to think mm-hmm. about. And I don't know that the show, like, hardcore nails it, but I do think they approach it. They get close enough to it that I'll take it. Like, I do like the idea that the show comes with in the sense of, like, you should always be wary of a woman who, like, does not have a lot of other women around her.
Right. Because the only woman who was really fucking with Elizabeth really and truly was her mom.
Right.
Which was a surprise to me because, you know, I went in, I guess, with preconceived notions that she had a weird relationship or a bad dynamic with her mom. But her mom was, like, a real one, actually. Like, besides her hair color, which her mom believed looked better brown, she really wasn't trying to change Elizabeth. She didn't make her daughter feel weird or different. And, you know, when Elizabeth was assaulted, her mom was like her chief supporter, right? Right. Through everything, Elizabeth's mom supported her and made her feel seen and made her feel heard. And so the background, financial issues with Enron aside, is one of the best that you could hope for, especially when you are a very intelligent young woman. Usually, sometimes families try to stamp out that fire, right? When a woman is really smart and she has all these lofty aspirations. But Elizabeth's family was like, no, she can do this.
Right. She can do this. Her parents gave her the Taylor Swift special. So
they really did. They're like,
you can do anything.
This way, she was a man. She can do anything. My girl's brilliant.
You can do anything, baby. It doesn't matter if you know how to do it or not.
Yeah, I want to talk more about this relationship with Sunny, right? Because she's with Sunny. Their relationship is consummated shortly after she officially drops out of Stanford. And, like, they're a couple. But nobody knows they're a couple. Like, secret lover. She was hiding that man, y'all. She was hiding him.
Yeah, but she loves that man in private.
Right. But when her company, she's in danger of losing the company. When she's in danger of being replaced as CEO, she asked him to come on as COO, right? Because she needs his money to bankroll this.
Right. She needs his money to bankroll it, but she also smartly knows that, like, a man is going to make the board feel more comfortable, but she knows that she is in full control of Sunny.
Right, but also there's, like, another edge to that, right? And, like, I didn't see it until... I didn't think she had thought that many steps ahead until that conversation. We're going to talk about that conversation.
Okay, yeah.
But,
yeah.
By asking him to come on as COO, and for those not in the know, that's abbreviation for Chief Operating Officer. This is the person that does the daily grind. This is the person that's, like, in the thick of it. This is the person who, for all intents and purposes, is running shit or appears to be running shit. She put him in a very vulnerable position where anytime shit was hitting the fan or was about to hit the fan, he looked like the bad guy. She didn't even have to say the words. Other people would automatically believe that Sunny was the problem and tell her that her problem was him and she needed to get rid of him.
Right. Which
they believe that he was the bulldog, was acting on his own reconnaissance, and that this wasn't coming from her, and it was.
And it absolutely was, which is why, like, it later on in the court... Which is, like, as aside, here's an aside for a minute, which is why later on in the court documents and the court filings, when she's like, when she tries to be like, he just had all this power over me, it's just like, oh, bitch, like, be so serious. Like, when she pulls that, like, the time honored, true, tried and true, like, tradition that white women do when they get in trouble of, like, I just didn't know what I was doing, and this scary brown man was telling me what to do, and, like, I just, oh my God, like, how was I, a little girl, supposed to know that this is what was happening? Like, when she eventually pulls that card, it is so nuts.
Oh, but let's talk about that conversation now. That conversation, right? Where things are about to hit the fan, and Sunny seeks his own legal counsel outside of Elizabeth, right? Because he realizes, like, this bitch doesn't have my back. This bitch threw me under the bus in a heartbeat. And she says to him, you know, I mean, did you do anything that I didn't ask you to do? What did you do, Sunny? Tell me, what did you do? I need to know what you did. I need to understand what's going on right now. You know, and, like, basically pretending as if she's completely unaware of like, the ordinance that he's passed at work and the people who've been fired and the board members who've been scammed and all of that, right?
Right.
And then she's like, I mean, you've been in my life for so long. How old was I even when we met? I was barely 18. And it's like, oh, okay, so this is where we're going with this. Like, you're already setting us up for, like, he preyed on me and he used me and he used my company. That's where we're going with this.
Listen, she said, I'm racism. It's going to work every time. Like,
racism and, you know, I'm just going to pull the he groomed me.
He groomed me. Yeah. I'm going to pull the scary brown man groomed me. And that's going to absolutely let me skate out of all of this scot-free. And listen, usually that does work. Like, historically, she's not. That's not a bad thing for her to bet on.
Mm-hmm. It's not. It's sad, but it's not.
It really isn't. But it didn't work this time, funny enough. Probably because he got his own counsel. But, like, granted, he was blamed. But, yeah, like, so, and that's, like, definitely, like, a part of their narrative. The Sunny-Elizabeth relationship. He is...
Now, before I go any further, I do want to point out, I'm not saying that it's not impossible that Sunny groomed Elizabeth into a relationship. What I'm saying is that in no way, shape, or form is that relationship responsible for the decisions that she made that a court found her guilty of making on her own. She started this company without any influence from him. And then without asking, can I work with you? She asked him to come to work for her company in order to have access to his money. So where Theranos is involved, Sonny was not controlling Elizabeth. If anything, he did too much to try to protect that girl.
He did. Like, he also is in the canon. Unfortunately, because, like, both of these people very much suck. But, like, he also is in the canon of men of color who only realize the truth once it's too late.
Yeah, it's sad, but
y'all
need to get better. Y'all need to get better about that. Like, so, and here's the thing about Elizabeth. He knew that she was scamming other people. He just didn't think it would blow back on him.
I've known
a lot of people like Sunny. I've been a Sunny where, like, I saw certain behaviors and I was like, they're only acting this way with this person. We're not like that. We have something more.
They will
treat you the same as all those other people. Please believe that. Please. If you don't believe anything else I've ever said, believe that. So Sonny, at the very least, protected himself by making sure that the house that he claimed he had bought for Elizabeth was under his name, because he realized that she had been using him the entire time. And not in the traditional sense of, young girl wants a sugar daddy type of situation. No. She wasn't even thinking about his money until she needed money for Theranos, right?
Right.
But when she needed the money for Theranos, that's when, like, all bets were off. And she changed a lot about herself, too, to try to keep that company afloat. She started talking in this weird voice. Like, she does this thing where she tries to make her voice sound more masculine in an effort to garner more authority and more trust from those around her.
Yeah, that part was really interesting. She's seeking to be taken seriously, right? Which is nuts because so many rich people have already given her so much money. But I guess she's more in the public eye and she's seeking to be taken more seriously. And one of the things that she does, is that she starts like messing with her voice. Because I think she kind of starts, like, talking, like, not up here, but, like, up here, definitely. And then by the time she gets this, she's, like, all the way down here. Like, she's...
It was so disconcerting, right?
But
by that point, a lot of the initial employees had either left or been fired. So all the new people, I guess, believed this was her voice.
Right, her voice. So let's talk about a little bit about how... Because the thing about Theranos is, like, they're straight up lying. They're just lying. Like, once they're, like, particularly, I think something that is really crazy is, like, they start basically petitioning, like, Walgreens and, like, all these, like, big companies to, like, carry the Theranos machine or whatever. And they are hardcore just, like, straight up lying to Walgreens about, like, what this machine can and cannot do. But
they're lying to everybody.
They are. They're lying to absolutely everyone. And so to the point where, like, they're using just, like, regular old lab tests. Like, they get to a point where they're, like, just using basically the old tried and true method of, like, testing blood to actually test the blood. And they get got. And listen, government regulations, y'all. If you've never, like, the government, like, I'm not saying I love the government, but I'm saying the government truly is our last line of defense because the way she gets got is just by this regular old government agency.
Right. So a lot of people tried to blow the whistle on Elizabeth because she was doing a few things. Now, going back to the professor who she asked for help, who turned her down in college, Dr. Phyllis Gardner. Phyllis was a pharmacologist who told Elizabeth right away, and could have told the whole board too, why this idea was bullshit and why the technology to make it work did not exist and probably wouldn't for a long time, right? It's like, you can't have patches on human bodies, like diagnosing people, administering blood when it's that close to people's bodies, and body temperature regulations, and drugs need to be kept at a certain temperature, and et cetera, et cetera. Like, she knew the science behind it, right? She knew the science of why this would fail. And then Elizabeth hires Ian Gibbons to perfect the technology. And even he's telling her, like, we're 10 years out from this, at least. Chill. So she doesn't want to chill because she's already got so many people's money caught up in this. And not only do they start, like, going ahead and running trials anyway on sick people, people with cancer, but they are doing the traditional blood tests using the Siemens machine. So a machine belonging to another company.
Right.
With another company's patent is what they're doing, like, the traditional blood test on. And then they're falsifying the event, the results of various tests, right? Because the Siemens machine isn't set up to diagnose, like, cancer and syphilis, right?
Right.
So when nothing is working and none of these board members can be convinced that this girl is a fraud, one of the former employees, Erica, writes a letter to CMS, which is a Center for Medicaid Services. They get a complaint, they have to come out and do an investigation, period.
They come to your office and they look around and they're like, and that's crazy because that's what happened.
So that's how she gets got. Like, literally, like, bureaucracy, bro.
Bureaucracy.
Not investigative journalism. That wasn't what did it in the end. It was bureaucracy.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why we cannot ease up on these regulations, you guys. Like, that's why they have all these fucking lobbyists. Try to change, like, y'all laws. Be like,
oh no, take the government out of my, no, back in.
Put that shit back in. Dead ass.
Because listen, who were the chief whistleblowers, right? They were Tyler and Erica. Tyler, who I feel like honestly, comparatively, lost a lot more than Erica. Because he also, like, lost his family, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, he was completely, like, practically disowned by his grandfather for even daring to insinuate that Elizabeth and her company were fraudulent.
Which, by the way, nuts.
So then when the grandfather cut him off, and this included financially, his parents spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees, right?
Right.
And to my knowledge, Erica didn't have to do that because either she hadn't signed an NDA or the NDA was just, like, null and void because they ended up firing her before the end of her probationary period. Like, they knew she was the other whistleblower with Tyler, so she got fired. Tyler was still an employee when he was still talking to them, hence the lawsuit, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So he lost a bunch of money. He got, like, well, his family lost a bunch of money. I think they lost their house as well, paying his legal fees. And his grandfather, like basically booted him. And at the end of the movie, like, they tell you that, like, even though his grandfather did try to, like, get his grandson's good name back, he never apologized to Tyler. Not until he was on his deathbed that he was like, I'm sorry.
Which is, he did not, nuts.
Shit is crazy. So these two are literally ruining their lives trying to expose the truth, and no one will listen to them until CMS got involved.
Until CMS was like, that's not a regulation. That's fake as hell. Like, wild, wild.
That's crazy. But you know what hurt me the most was what they did to Ian Gibbons. And you talked about this earlier. Like, Ian, yes, Gibbons was really like, ooh. Ian Gibbons was like, listen, this girl has a revolutionary idea and the science isn't there, but I'm going to try to make it so that the science is there. With enough time, we can do this. We're friends. We're in this great think tank together, right? Mm-hmm. It was him and another scientist, Edmund, who I feel like were done the dirtiest. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it fast enough. Elizabeth had them working round the clock, right? Almost 24-hour shifts. They hired more scientists so that everyone could work 12-hour shifts. Edmund was missing time with his family, like his wife and his daughters. you know, Ian was missing time with his wife, and not to mention working all those hours isn't good for someone who's had cancer a few times, which he had. Mm-hmm. And which is why he desperately needed them to give him health care insurance if he was going to keep working with them. But fast forward, like, Ian starts asking questions they don't want to answer. So they fire him. But then the rest of the science team is like, if you fire him, we're going to quit. So they bring him back. But they bring him back as, like, almost like a figurehead. Mm-hmm. They won't let him in his laboratory. They won't let him do any actual real science.
Yeah, and, like, it all culminates in, like, Ian killing himself. Like,
yes!
Which is so crazy. Like, they drove that man...
That was such a blow to me.
That was so horrible. Like, they drove him to suicide, which is awful. Awful. It's truly awful. Like...
And, like, oh, my God. When his wife realizes what has happened... Because he does this while he's in the house after taking the dogs for a walk, right? And, like, she's the only person that he had talked to about his misgivings with the company and everything that Elizabeth was putting him through. And it's, I think it's so odd that until Carrie and Phyllis Gardner came to her door, or was it Phyllis and Richard, no one had come by to ask his widow anything. They just picked up a bunch of papers, right, from Theranos and dipped. None of the people who were, like, trying to whistleblow ever came to see this man's widow.
Right? Like, that is so...
And like, that's the first place I would go, because I'm like, a woman scorned is one thing, but a woman in grief, that's a whole other animal.
That's true. That's a whole different thing. And I, that was so sad and upsetting. It was just so sad.
It was, because I don't think it was until the very end that he realized that Elizabeth didn't care about him.
Yeah, I think
because for a very long time he believed that they were friends, right?
Right, and I think that that's what makes him such a tragic figure. It's like he truly believed that they were friends. Yeah, they were friends, and like, and you know, aging is such a weird thing. You know, you get older and. You know, your friend, like, I think your friends start outliving them, like, you know, when you're getting older, and then it's hard, like, and once you're an older person, I think it's really difficult to make new friends. And so to have somebody that you feel like is a genuine friend, you know, and to is like, can really, I think, put a sort of new vigor in you, and then to realize that that's not real is so, like, true. Yeah, it's really emotionally devastating. I really, really feel for that Ian character, and I think that arc is done so beautifully.
I agree. It's interesting to me, though, too, that, like, when he dies, Elizabeth seems to have a very visceral reaction, first of, like, grief, and then literally within seconds, she's like, oh, well, he's dead. They can't subpoena him. We're in the clear.
Oh, so gross. So gross.
So gross. I was just like, this is next level psychopathic.
Right. This is so, like, this is true blue sociopathy.
I have to ask this question, too, because I don't think we got to it yet. The idea itself behind Theranos, do you think, like, it's an idea that has real potential? Like, not real potential, but, like, just in the grand scheme of things, if we live in a world of anything's possible, would this be something that could have revolutionized healthcare?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I don't believe that we live in a world of anything's possible. So that's, first of all, I think a lot of things are possible, but... I mean, I think so. Like, I suppose. I did research and, like, a sort of read on, like, Elizabeth and everything that happened, but I didn't hardcore do any sort of deep dive into the actual science behind it and, like, what they were trying to do or what they were trying to prove.
Okay, so for reference, just for everyone out there, their initial statement said that they could diagnose X number of illnesses with just one drop of blood, which was later amended to a few drops of blood. And it was initially set up for people who are afraid of needles, like Elizabeth's mother, but also people who needed early diagnosis, like her uncle, who ends up dying later in the series. And then from there, the company was going to, once they got that like set in stone, they were going to work on a patch, which you would wear on your body, which would administer your drugs to you without you having to remember to take them.
Yeah, that's goofy. I don't know. I think I'd rather just like, I think I'd rather just work on having like equal access to healthcare for everybody. Like, have everybody in the country have equitable access to healthcare and like lots of doctors for everyone, because in like, you know, doctors that are actually worth something. But because that's, yeah, I don't know. Like, that seems goofy. Like, yeah, the only thing I think I worry about now these days are like, if anyone's gonna invent anything to reverse all this COVID shit. Like,
all right, now the big question. Big question. And Phyllis Gardner said this a few times, but do you believe that because of all the people, the very money people who fell for this scam and invested so much of their money and their reputations into this, that the fraudulent nature of Elizabeth Holmes and her company have affected women in tech negatively?
Probably. Yes, I would say so. I mean, I feel like stuff like this is always, there's always like a gendered aspect to that. Like, yes, it will affect, it will inevitably affect women in tech more than like Billy McFarland is going to influence, you know, men in finance, right?
Right. And you have to think of it too, like the way that she got her college professor to come on as the first board member is because he hadn't invested in another startup, I believe Yahoo or something like that, that his students had asked him to come in on. And so he was dealing with like very serious FOMO when he said yes to Elizabeth.
Right.
And she turned out to be a fraud.
Right. And I think another part of it, and I think like one of the women in the series even mentioned something to the effect of this. I think another part of it in regards to like everybody in Silicon Valley, it's like this, like it's also like, I don't think any of these people are motivated by we're going to do something really great for the world. I think at this point, like they're motivated by greed in a very serious like way. And that it's ultimately like, to me, that's ultimately like the downfall. Like they're motivated by greed of like, okay, how are we going to make a shit ton of money? Cause they are, I mean, they're looking for, you know, the Facebook, right? Or the Twitter. But I think those times are finished. Like, I also think that like, you know, Facebook was, I feel like people like to I think people are kind of revisionist about Facebook, like in terms of like how it came to be. Like it was something that, yes, Mark Zuckerberg like dropped out of Harvard for it, but like he tinkered with it for years. Like,
well, not only that, like technically other people created it.
Created like, it, yeah.
And like he had to like pay them out or pay them off.
Yeah.
So there was a lot going on to that. Like it's not as cut and dry as people like to romanticize it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's not as cut and dry. And I think that's, but people have this revisionist history of Facebook in the sense of like, it too like was made very quickly and had its like, and obviously now it is something that is with us forever. Like, I don't know if we will ever get to like a post Facebook world. I hope we do, because it hasn't like, because it's, you know, it's become a malignant force, but like, it's not, like you said, other people made it, and those people like spent like they did it for a while. So like this idea of wanting these incredible things super quickly is not like real. That's just not a real thing. I think that's the thing to to come back to and to remember, and to not let that and to not let greed sort of drive you to do unspeakable things, which this was. This was really unspeakable. I think what makes the Elizabeth Holmes stuff fundamentally less fun than the Anna Delvey stuff is, like, she ruined people's real lives. Like, there were real
people. Right, because she wasn't playing with their money. She was playing with their health.
Health. Okay? Yeah, like, she ruined people's real lives. Like, she was out here diagnosing or, you know, telling people they were fine who could potentially be very sick, telling these people whatever because of her own ego, and not, and like, she just didn't have people's real best interests at heart. And we saw, like, the direct ramifications of that. I mean,
another, like, thing I need to bring up too is, like, Anna was literally, what was it, like, they were going to investigate her trust, right?
Right.
And she was, like, one trust investigation away from getting that money to start that club. Elizabeth was, at best, 10 years away from the technology that she needed to operate the way that Theranos had promised those people it would operate. So imagine how many lives could have been lost in the span of 10 years.
Right. And I also feel like it's so, when you think about it, like, in 10 years, she would be 30. Like, you can't wait the 10 years. You know what I mean? In 10 years, she would be 30. Like, that's young. You're very young. Like, that's...
Well, no, like, 10 years from the time where they actually sold themselves to Walmart. So she would have been like 34, 35 by then.
but like, yeah, 35, you're still very young. You're still very, like, whatever. Like, that's, you know, that's totally fine. Why not just wait the 10 years? You know, like, what was, did it really need to result in all of this? Like, what did you really have to lose by going back? Like, I mean, no, obviously, like you said, her people's money was wrapped up in it. But, you know, people spend money on bullshit all the time. Like, rich people give away money off of bullshit all the time. I don't know, like, what. And I feel like people who have money like that, like, they expect to burn money, like, in that sense. So I don't understand why you couldn't just be like, in 10 years, we will have the tech to really develop this and you'll finally get your returns. Like, but right now, it's just not going to happen.
I mean, I get it, right? Because she was selling them on this need, this immediacy, right?
This urgency.
But, like, yeah, it was really urgent. We need to get this, like, we need to get this done. But, like, my whole thing is, it's not done. Why don't you go sit in a room quietly with Ian and Edmund and get it done and then start doing all the pitches and, you know, work part-time at Starbucks until then? There's no shame in that.
Right, that's really real. Like, I feel like people think there's this shame. There's, like, a shame in failure. There isn't, I don't know. There's no shame. I don't know. There's no shame in, like, getting somewhere and then, like, having to, you know, go back, regroup, and try again.
Yeah. Agreed. Last question. Now, this aired before the trial had ended. Post-trial, Elizabeth was found guilty and sentenced to 11 years and 3 months in prison, and Sonny was found guilty on all counts and sentenced to 12 years and 11 months plus 3 years probation. How do we feel about the fact that Sonny got more time than Elizabeth?
America, man. America. Yeah, that's it. That's all I've got. Like, you either get it. You either get the history of this country or you don't. Like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, her relationship at the end kind of surprised me, but it kind of didn't. Now, I'm going to point to a specific scene in the show. And tell me if you remember this scene. Elizabeth needs to get into her iPhone. And then, like, the girl, she starts chatting with the girl trying to retrieve her information, right? Mm-hmm. And then the girl's like, I don't really know what I want to do with my life. She's like, you're so lucky. You don't you don't want to do anything important. You don't, like, people don't depend on you. You can just do whatever you want. And I think she thought she was being, like, kind and uplifting, but, like, the look on the girl's face was like, wow, she's actually, like, dragging me for filth.
Right. But, like, but I feel like I really understood her in that moment. Because I had some shit
that I did, but I'm like, that is, like, the most, like, I don't know how to mask shit ever. That's, like, Sheldon shit, right?
No, dead ass. Because, like, that's dead ass some shit I would say. Like, I'd be like, you can just do whatever the fuck you want. Like, it's a possibility. Like...
But she didn't even say it like that. She was like, you're so lucky you don't have anything important going on in your head. You're so lucky you're not smart and, like, you're not going to change anybody's life.
That's so rude.
It was. And I was just like, accurate, but girl,
there's ways to say that. Like, oh man. But I really liked it. I liked Amanda Seyfried. I love Naveen Andrews. Always love Naveen Andrews. I'm always happy to see him wherever he may be. And there's a lot of, like, great, like, there's a lot of, like, good actors, actresses. And I generally liked the show and the flow of it and how it ran from episode to episode. So I would give it, like, I'm going to give it a solid good. Good from me.
I'm going to agree with that. I mean, we already agree. We agree that Amanda Seyfried and Naveen Andrews did what they had to do. I'm going to give a shout out to a little unsung hero here. William H. Macy, I think, is great as Richard Fuse. I love Stephen Fry as Ian Gibbons. And unsung hero for me is Michaela Watkins, who plays Linda Tanner, the Theranos' in-house counsel. She did what she had to do. She really came. Every scene she was in, I feel like she delivered. Because her body, her face, her voice was always, I support Theranos, but her body language was like, fuck this shit.
Fuck this shit deeply. Like, a true lawyer. And there you have it, folks. This is everything that we think made The Dropout good, intriguing, and challenging. If you'd like to check out the series, The Dropout is currently streaming on Hulu. If you've enjoyed this episode of The Good, The Bad, The Basic, be sure to share it with your friends. If you're a patron, be sure to check out our The Dropout playlist if you haven't already. Tune in next week where we keep the season going by discussing the Netflix original Unbelievable. A true crime drama about an unknown serial rapist and one young woman's desperate attempts at finding peace in the wake of having her claims challenged.
The Good, The Bad, The Basic is currently streaming on all major podcast platforms, so be sure to tune into our regular weekly episodes on the go. Leave us a review on your preferred platform and share our weekly episodes on your social media. Follow us at The Good Bad Basic on Twitter and at Good Bad Basic Pod on Instagram to get in on our daily content. Also, be sure to follow our SoundCloud page, The Good, The Bad, The Basic, where all of our weekly episodes debut. If you love this sort of content and want more, become a show producer and patron over on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/goodbadbasic. Your support allows us to keep bringing you our regular weekly episodes as well as exclusive bonus material. Until next time, bye everyone.